Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host, Alfred Addisk, along with James Corbett of the Corbett Report, will be joining you for the second and third segment of the program today. So let's first begin with the market report, and today is Thursday, November 19th, 2015. Nice day in gold, although we'll take it. Still a far cry from what gold should be doing, but we have gold up $1,190 today. $1,190 at $1,082.90. At the peak of the day, we had $1,088. So we were $6 higher earlier in the day. Silver was up 10 at $1,438. Platinum up 6 at $859. And we also have palladium up 5 at $543. The USDX today, a little pressure on that, 0.62 at 98.95. Crude oil was down 0.31 at 40.44. Paper markets today, just down slightly. The Dow is down 4 points, 17,732. They were all over the page today. They were stronger. They were weaker. The NASDAQ, again, down 1 point. All of them were just fractionally changed. 5,073. The S&P down 2 at 2,081. 10-year yield, again, 2.25%. Euro with the drop in the dollar up 0.60, still at 107. European markets, Japan and Hong Kong were up fairly large. You have Germany back up over 11%. A little bit of activity going on overseas. And that fear trade that we talk about, the fear and greed index, again, it's a sign of a trend. But it's reversing, and it's surprising. The only time there's fear is when the markets go down. I mean, you could have a nuclear blast go off in California, and this indicator probably would move. But if that stock market went down 2,000 points, yeah, then all of a sudden we see the trend go into the fear area. But I'll tell you what, if you're looking at the headlines today and you're reading these articles in the comments, you would think that people should be scared out of their wits. I mean, there's all kinds of headlines, and we'll talk a lot about these tomorrow with these Syrians that are caught at the Texas border. You have some that these Syrians, these Muslims, ISIS, are already in the U.S. They've been coming for years. They're already at work, and I do believe that. I do believe they're already at work, and I do believe they've been here for a very long time. I can remember in the 90s, of course, we had, at that point in time, it was Iraqis that were coming over with the suitcase bombs and the dirty, one of the dirty bombs and so forth. But everything was blamed on the Iraqis. And now it's been switched to, ISIS and Syrians and Muslims and so forth. So, it is amazing that the mainstream media can get away with all of this fear-mongering reporting. Show us some facts, show us some real news, but of course we know that's not reporting anymore. So, but even if you take a 10% of some of these articles and reports and so forth, I think we've seen that this country truly is without leadership with our open borders and everything else that's going on. It's like we're being set up for something to happen. And, I hopefully that is not the case. But, there's even reports over in Rome. State Department warns Americans abroad to steer clear of the Vatican. And then it's also ISIS is pursuing chemical weapons, and with all these types of headlines, you're going to see polls for Donald Trump go higher. You're going to see, a lot of these, like in France, and you'll see a lot of their more conservative parties, begin to take lead, and perhaps they will kick out some of these current leaders, these New World Order leaders that are currently in position. So a lot of headlines, and I know a lot of you folks are following that. You have to keep everything in perspective, and the whole thing is if you're prepared, even your finances, because we see how quick things can turn around, if you're prepared, you'll be protected, and you'll be able to do many more things that a lot of folks won't be able to, so like provide for your family. As we get ready for Thanksgiving next week, Thanksgiving Day next week, if you're shopping for your meal this weekend, you will be paying the highest price ever for a turkey. The average cost of Thanksgiving dinner in the U.S. this year will rise to a record, topping $50 for the first time. My question was, when was the last time you spent $50 on a Thanksgiving Day dinner? Probably in 1985. I mean, maybe if you're single and you go out to eat, or you buy a little, a little hen or something, but topping them. So anyway, you'll pay a record topping $50 for the first time. Turkey prices jumped 6.4%. And of course, that's because of the worst outbreak ever of avian influenza that wiped out millions of birds. I'm not even sure that I'd even want a turkey this year. I don't know. It's just, I'm sure they're fine. But we got something else to talk about. Frankenfish. We'll be talking about that here in just a little bit. The 12 items typically served during the holiday meal is going to rise 1.4% to an average of 50.11 for 10 people. How can you serve 10 people for $50? I guess they're using the inflation rates that Washington uses. Hey, if you shop where those, those Washington people shop, yeah, there's no inflation in this country. So maybe this is based on, and it is from the American Farm Bureau Federation in Washington. So maybe these are the numbers that they're using. A turkey weighing 16 pounds will increase to $23 from 21. Sweet potatoes, rolls, stuffing, and pumpkin pie mix and shells were up 1% to 8 cents, or 1 cent to 8 cents, according to the survey by 138 volunteer shoppers, but hey, in 32 states. But that bird flu was nasty. It destroyed more than 7.7 million turkeys earlier this year. Milk, let's talk about milk. That's going to drop 14% to 3.25. So that's going to be lowered. That's going to help your meal. inflation to stay around that $50 mark. Your milk is going to be cheaper, so that means your whipping cream and there's some miscellaneous ingredients that have also gone down a little bit, like your peas, your cranberries, carrots, and celery. So, and as we all know, Thanksgiving is next Thursday, November 26th. Report came out, well, while we're talking about food, before I talk about Janet Yellen and the United Health and Healthcare in their insurance changes, let's go to Frankenfish. Government approves genetically modified salmon, and we can affectionately call it Frankenfish. It's the first for human consumption in the United States. The FDA today approved genetically modified salmon, the first such altered animal allowed for human consumption in the United States. Well, there goes my salmon. You know, the administration, Obama, they did stall it for about the past 5 years because there were consumer concerns about eating this stuff. But the agency said today that the fish is safe to eat. There are no biologically relevant differences in the nutritional profile of Aqua Advantage salmon compared to that of other farm-raised Atlantic salmon. Of course not. Of course there's no differences. You know, so why don't you tell us, you know, how did they genetically modify these fish? Why don't you tell us that? And if you weren't so concerned about that there is no difference, well, then make sure they're labeled to let us know when we're buying salmon that it is genetically modified. So if there was no concerns, then what's the big deal? But now get this. Now, you think, you know, Aqua Advantage, you know, that sounds like it's, you know, it's going to be fish for the United States, salmon for the United States. Aqua Advantage salmon is engineered by the Massachusetts-based company Aqua Bounty. Okay, Massachusetts, United States. Massachusetts, okay, at least it's keeping it here in the country. But the Frankenfish had to meet several requirements beyond safety rules. For instance, the fish can be raised only in land-based tanks in Canada and Panama and cannot be produced in the U.S. The agency cited several measures that are being taken to contain the fish and prevent their escape into open water. Okay, now, if this is an okay thing to eat, well, you certainly don't want it to escape into open water. I mean, it goes beyond belief anymore. It truly does. Lisa McCursky, Republican out of Alaska, senator, she said she was in shock at the FDA's approval, saying that genetically engineered fish could harm the environment and may be unsafe. The senator, of course, we all know Alaska and their seafood industry, and particularly salmon, seems to be more science experiment than fish or food. And it was just last year that I had reports from my clients in Alaska that there was the salmon were not doing what they're supposed to do. There was a lot less salmon. They weren't coming into the areas that they were supposed to. And they actually, it was one of the first years that they actually had to put restrictions on fishing on salmon. So not sure if this all of a sudden approval for this Frankenfish has anything to do with something that's going on with the salmon in Alaska, and then I guess everybody might point their fingers to perhaps it has something to do with Fukushima, you know, maybe the salmon and so forth. I know they're tucked up in there a little bit, but don't know, can't prove it, just a thought. The company's CEO said in a statement that the fish is a game changer. It certainly is. That brings healthy and nutritious food to consumers. I wonder how much it's going to cost. You know, hey, if it's genetically modified and then, you know, they're going to do it out, you should be able to get it for 50 cents. 50 cents a fish, maybe. I don't know, but certainly it doesn't. And here they're talking about, you know, they're trying to be more environmentally responsible without damaging the ocean and other marine habitats. Well, if any of those fish escape, what do you think you're doing to the other marine habitants? So, again, it's just another sign of the time, folks. And having your food stored now just kind of makes a little bit more sense. That might be healthier for you than anything that you can buy in the grocery store. The future for United Health in insurance exchanges in a component of health overhaul. They're having a lot of problems. They're questioning their future in these public insurance exchanges. And they're signaling major concerns about how these online marketplaces that have helped the Affordable Care Act extend coverage to millions of people. They're going to scale, United Health Group are going to scale back marketing plans it sells on the exchanges and decide next year whether it will even stay in that business in 2017. They're cutting their 2015 earnings forecast, and this announcement comes a few weeks after several smaller nonprofit insurance cooperatives said they would stop selling coverage on the state-based exchanges. Insurers are struggling to attract enough healthy customers to offset those that sign up and are not so healthy. So, again, thank you, Obamacare, making it more and more difficult for us to get insurance, making it more and more difficult to have affordable insurance in our health care, and has certainly placed a lot of problems in businesses and pressures. And so the best thing that they could ever do would be to overturn Obamacare and get it back to a more competitive business within the insurance industry. But if you listen to old Bernie Sanders, I listened to his speech today, you know, his democratic socialist agenda, and you know, he thinks every American in this country does need to have health care and free college tuition for everyone. So you know, maybe we should just get a check from them. Hey, why don't you just pass out checks to everybody and let's buy whatever we want that would help the economy for a little bit. Today, the House approves GOP legislation to increase Fed oversight. Yellen warns bill could harm economy. The Republican-controlled House has defied a White House veto threat. Well, I guess he can still veto it. So, you know, again, to me, it's just kind of like, you know, what a waste of time. You know, you work on something to get something passed, which shouldn't be any problem since it's a Republican-controlled House. You know he's going to veto it. And so what a waste of time. Can't they work on something that is productive and that can really make a difference? This is an important one. It is a bill that would make the Federal Reserve more transparent and accountable. The bill would direct the Fed to be more open in communicating monetary policy decisions and require the central bank to use a mathematical rule in determining where to set interest rates. Doesn't say much about auditing. Now, I don't see anything on here where it says audit the Fed. But Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen calls that approach unworkable and says it would lead to poor economic outcomes. The White House says the bill would compromise the Fed's independence and undercut its credibility as it acts in the nation's long-term economic threats. House Speaker Paul Ryan says forcing the Fed to explain to the public how it makes its decisions would give Americans greater confidence in those decisions. Well, how about letting the Americans make some of those decisions? And if the Federal Reserve didn't have anything to hide, Janet Yellen would say, instead of calling the approach unworkable, she would agree to release something. You know, maybe to release a little bit of something and at least say and go along with the program and say, yeah, we will, blah, blah, all along knowing that they wouldn't. Or perhaps she would release just some pertinent details that would most likely shut everyone up but the Federal Reserve does protest too much. 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you give us a call. We got some great prices on gold and silver. Everything is available, and we're heading into commercial break right now. Make sure you visit our website, dgscoins.com. Alfred and James Corbett will be joining you, so please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adisk, and this is the American Independence Hour brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. James Corbett has been living and working in Japan since 2004. He started the Corbett Report in 2007 as an outlet for independent critical analysis of politics, society, history, and economics. He's also an editorial writer for the International Forecaster, a weekly e-newsletter. Hello, James. How are you this evening?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
This morning where you are.
Yes.
This evening where I am and this morning.
Well, just turned afternoon, if you want to be very technical.
All right. Let's be very technical. I see that you've got a report dealing with the Paris attacks podcast, and it's been reported at Freedom's Phoenix. I don't know if you're aware of that or not, but they have Paris attacks truth. ISIS is a false flag. Corbett Report, open source investigation. You're alleging that ISIS is a false flag and the Paris attacks, this is calling them into the validity of these attacks or the reality is being questioned. Tell us why you think the Paris attacks may not be what they appear to be.
Well, let's put this in the context and of the bigger picture of what's going on. And, of course, there's still things developing with regards to the attacks themselves, the investigation, what is now being reported as we record this conversation, that the supposed ringmaster mastermind, Abdelhamid Aboud, may or may not have been killed yesterday. And so it's still an unfolding story. But my point is to take a look at the sort of background of this story. The fundamental point of the story that we're expected to take away and that we're expected to get outraged about and then direct that outrage outward is, of course, we're supposed to be outraged. Of course, this is the Islamic State. This is Islamic State terrorists who have infiltrated France and have committed this atrocity. So the only answer is to go and bomb Syria. And that seems very straightforward until you start to peel away the layer of what is the Islamic State and where did it come from. And this is not something that should be new to my audience, and I think we've discussed it before, but this is the documented fact, not even really contested at this point, that the rise of ISIS, the fostering, the funding, the protection, the equipping, the arming of ISIS, the training of ISIS fighters has occurred at every stage along the way with the active complicity of Saudi Arabia, Qatar, the United States, Turkey, Israel. All of these forces have been implicated. And again, this is not from conspiratorial sources. This is mainstream documented information. And I think one of the most interesting parts when we look specifically in regards to the Paris attacks are the ways that France itself has been complicit in this over the last few years, where, of course, the meme has been that they've been funding and training and helping and arming and equipping the moderate terrorists in Syria, quote unquote. But somehow or another, wouldn't you know it, all of these arms and training and money continues to end up in the hands of the Islamic State. So in the French connection...
I just hate it when that happens, don't you?
Yes, I know. Yeah. I mean, who could have predicted it? And then when it was predicted and came true, who could have possibly stopped doing that? Apparently not these politicians, including French President François Hollande, who in 2012, in direct contravention to an EU embargo that was in place at the time, the French were illegally sending shipments of arms to Syrian terrorists, and of course the moderate terrorists, not the bad terrorists.
The good terrorists.
And these deliveries included cannons, machine guns, rocket launchers, and anti-tank missiles that at least partially ended up in the stores of the Islamic State that they're now supposedly at war with. In late 2012, it came out that the largest monetary backer of the Syrian terrorists was France, or at least one of the largest. I don't think any hard numbers were available, but France was one of the hardest, and that included delivering money directly to terrorist leaders in Syria at that time. Last year, in 2014, the French arms export industry enjoyed a bonanza sale, their best year of sales in 15 years. Their revenues were up 18% over the year before. Who was their number one buyer? Saudi Arabia, who is, of course, arming and sending funds to the terrorists in Syria. The situation in Syria cannot be viewed without looking at this key question of who has created the conditions for the rise of this Islamic State. And in every single place you turn, it is France and the United States, NATO allies, the Gulf states, Israel, Turkey, have been eyeball deep in this. And I think unless we squarely confront that reality, we can't possibly hope to understand what's really taking place with regards to these terror attacks, or where we should really be directing our resources in order to stop the attacks from happening in the future.
Well, there's the question. While we have two questions, who is responsible for creating ISIS, and why are they doing so? What is going on here, in fact? If we don't have what we might call legitimate terrorists who have sprung up out of the sand, and they are fighting for whatever it is they think they need to fight for, if they are, in fact, some sort of a mercenary army that's being funded by elements of Western governments, what are they trying to accomplish?
Well, the one strategic goal that all of these different players that I've mentioned have at least the sort of the short-term goal that they're specifically trying to do in Syria is to either topple the Assad government or destabilize the Assad government so it becomes ineffective, shall we say. And this, again, we don't have to speculate about this. We can take even the word of the Defense Intelligence Agency of the United States, one of the agencies that make up the U.S. intelligence community on the military side, which in 2012 issued a statement that the let me quote directly from a report that was released earlier this year. It was a previously classified DIA report from August of 2012 that said the Salafists, the Muslim Brotherhood, and AQI, a.k.a. the Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which became ISIS, are the major forces driving the insurgency in Syria and were being supported by the West, Gulf countries, and Turkey. And that report went on to say, quote, if the situation unravels, there is the possibility of establishing a declared or undeclared Salafist principality in eastern Syria. And this is exactly what the supporting powers to the opposition want in order to isolate the Syrian regime. So it is all about destabilizing and or toppling completely the Assad government. And in order to do that, they have willfully created, in the words of the former head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, who told Al Jazeera in an interview that it was a willful policy decision on Washington's part to create this Islamic State opposition in order to topple Assad. That is the one point at which all of these various forces converge, and they have their own reasons for wanting to do so, but that's where this is aimed. And that's why when this bombing campaign and renewed war campaign inevitably gets around to, well, we have to get rid of the Assad government, that's going to be the giant ridiculous lie that they're going to sell on the back of this. Because, of course, Assad and his army have been at war with the Islamic State more directly than any of the other partners have been, even the ones pretending, giving lip service to the idea that they're at war with the Islamic State. Of course, it's Assad that is on the front lines and has been providing the main brunt of the opposition to the Islamic State. But somehow they're going to say, well, we have to bomb Assad and we have to get rid of the Assad government so that we can properly take care of the Islamic State. And I think that will be when the cards are all out on the table.
Why is our government so determined to eliminate Assad? What's he done?
It depends, again, from which perspective you're coming from. The Saudis and Turkey have their own... Well, let's deal with Turkey. Turkey is an extremely important route for oil leaving Central Asia, leaving the Caspian Sea region, leaving that area of the global chessboard, if you will, on its way towards Europe. It's a major supply route, unless there was, for example, a gas pipeline from the North Pars gas field in Iran to via Iraq through Syria into Europe. That would be a major blow to Turkey's strategic interests and its strategic position as a place where all of this oil and gas is going to be flowing through. And that's exactly what was on the table, a proposed Iran-Iraq-Syria pipeline, right before all of this brouhaha and kerfuffle in Syria started. Turkey also, with regards to the fighting, quote-unquote, fighting the Islamic State in Syria, also gets to fight their age-old opposition, the Kurds, who, of course, always caused troubles for the Turkish government, who basically prefer to eliminate the Kurds from the face of the planet. And so they get to move into Syria and start fighting the Kurds more so than they do the Islamic State. When you look at the Gulf states, Saudi Arabia obviously sees Iran as one of its major threats, regional rivals, and Iran, Syria, Lebanon are all linked in the Shia crescent, which is in opposition to Saudi Arabia and its power, the Sunnis. When you look at Israel, they've had a plan on the table for decades now to destabilize, specifically to destabilize Iraq and Syria as a way of keeping that region in enough Sunni-Shia turmoil that Israeli presence and hegemon is not threatened. So they have, for example, the Times of Israel reported earlier this year, the Israeli government now admits they were actively protecting and aiding ISIS fighters. They were actually transporting them to and taking care of them in Israeli hospitals. That's a pretty bizarre little thing. But of course, the part of the deal was that the ISIS wouldn't be attacking Israeli interests in Israel or in the surrounding region. And it seems ISIS has lived up to that part of the bargain. And of course, the United States has a long history of wanting to overthrow the Assad government that goes back to the Bush regime. Back in 2006 is when the covert operations in Syria actually started, because Assad was a willing participant in the war on terror and was a willing torture participant. The CIA would send people to Syria to be tortured, but Assad wasn't enough of a willing partner for the United States, and it's better for their interests if they had a more serviceable puppet in that position. So again, everyone's coming at this from a different angle, but everyone has the same goal: get rid of or at least destabilize Assad.
You talk about Turkey, which is a Muslim nation, not a theocracy, but a Muslim nation. They are interested in fighting with the Kurds. They are willing to get involved in fighting ISIS and other Muslim, presumably Muslim entities. How many other Muslim countries and entities can we expect to go to war, to get involved in this conflict? And you kind of hinted at this. Israel, for example, you're alleging that Israel wants the Shia and the Sunnis to fight, lets you and you guys fight. And I'm wondering, will we expect to see more turmoil and Muslim against Muslim conflict in the Middle East, given that the price of oil has fallen dramatically, fallen over, 50% in the last 12, 18 months? Is that putting the Muslim nations under such stress that they're willing to fight against other Muslim nations, at least with a little provocation?
Well, it is happening right now, so I guess we just have to understand why it's happening. And I think that the Sunni-Shia split, is there's a lot made of that, and I think there is something historically to that. But I don't think that's the be-all and end-all of this. I think there are geopolitical and economic and strategic interests that do with the oil pipelines and regional dominance and things of that nature. But, of course, politicians are always happy to piggyback on top of those types of rivalries and to drive wedges in there in order to exploit them for their political purposes, which is why the Saudi Arabian government has fostered and funded Wahhabist extremist Sunni groups for decades. Again, this is not particularly new news to anyone that the Saudi Arabian government has been behind the rise, for example, of Al-Qaeda, with obviously Osama bin Laden being Saudi of 19 of the, I can't remember, 16, 15 of the 19 9/11 supposed hijackers being Saudi extraction. I mean, the Saudis have been behind a lot of this extremist Islamic terror for a long time, but of course that's the Sunni brand of terror, and it's usually directed at most vehemently at the Shia groups in the region. Saudi Arabia has a Shia minority that in its strategic oil area that it definitely always wants to suppress as much as possible. So it's always in its interest to play up that Sunni-Shia divide as much as possible. And the Iranians, of course, feel threatened by Saudi Arabia, so they will play on the Sunni-Shia split as well. I think that those tensions are exploited, and I think there is something to them, but I think the ultimate underlying feature of this are the geostrategic, the economic reasons that, of course, politicians just find convenient boogeymen to place on top of that, just like in the West.
When Saudi Arabia is accused of initiating the fall in the prices of crude oil, they allegedly, I've seen reports that indicate the United States, they claim that the United States invited Saudi Arabia, why don't you suppress the price of oil? This goes back 18 months ago or thereabouts. Saudi Arabia went along with this, presumably just as a matter of commercial, just a matter of commerce, trying to take advantage of its competitors. But is the real reason that Saudis, if the Saudis helped lower the price of oil, if that's true, is the real motivation to create turmoil in the Middle East, not just to get a commercial advantage, but to create political turmoil within the Middle East? Do you think that's possible?
Well, the theory that has been floated is that this took place at a summit between John Kerry and his Saudi Arabian counterpart, as you say, about 18 months ago. And that deal was supposedly, people speculate, I believe, I don't think obviously there's anything hard and fast on this, but the speculation was that that deal was U.S. trying to target primarily Russia, as well as some of its other oil-dependent enemies, but primarily Russia, by dropping the price of oil. And the Saudis, in return, would get a greater degree of American support for the what's happening in Syria, i.e. military support, because the Saudis had been very angry at the U.S. for quite a while for not invading and not bombing Assad out of existence. So that was supposedly the deal that was taking place. If that was the deal, clearly it hasn't quite worked out in either party's favor, because now Saudi Arabia itself is getting into budgetary problems because the price of oil has been so depressed. I tend to think that it's possible that the Saudis did contribute to the decline in oil prices, although there are other things going on as well, including just the general commodity deflation, which I think was already depressing oil prices. But regardless of whether or not Saudi Arabia was primarily responsible for the drop in oil prices, I don't think they have the power at this point to just magically flip a switch and bring the price back up.
It's a little like the Sorcerer's Apprentice, that cartoon, that Disney cartoon, where he looks in the book and finds out how to get the broomstick to haul water, and next thing you know, he's got more water. They're going to drown in all the water.
Be careful what you wish for, maybe.
Stop them. We're going to stop for a moment, take some commercials. I'm Alfred Adask here with James Corbett on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll free. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adask here with James Corbett from thecorbettreport.com, talking about the recent attacks in Paris. I don't know what the number is. I've heard over 150, 129 people killed. I don't know what the final count is. Allegedly 350 people injured by these attacks. And speculating or looking at the evidence that maybe this is not what it appears to be, we've got an article from the Washington Examiner that says terrorism has vaulted the nation's number one issue as Americans say they are concerned about the attacks, meaning the attacks in Paris, as they were after the Boston Marathon bombing in 2013. Are we overreacting to this?
Well, it's always a question of perspective. And I think that that's something that is probably the first casualty of the war on terror is perspective, where, of course, if people put it into the perspective of how many people, for example, die on the roads of the United States every day versus mm-hmm. how many people have died in terrorist attacks, I mean, that's the kind of perspective that that is usually lacking in moments like this. So I would say, yes, I mean, the threat of terrorism generally is overblown, but having said that, people do feel genuine threats to their safety and security. And I think for those people, I think, again, the question has to go back to how a group like this is able to perpetrate and perpetuate its structure and its organization to coordinate military-style attacks, you know, in the heart of Europe, in at places like that. That can't happen without an infrastructure, and that infrastructure can't come to being, can't come to fulfillment, unless there are people playing ball with it in one way or another.
And meaning that the infrastructure can't maintain secrecy in this day and age. I mean, the CIA, the NSA, somebody should be spying on their telephone calls, their internet communications. They should have caught wind of this one way or another. You can't run that infrastructure just on the basis of passing little messages on pieces of paper or micro dots or whatever. It should show up. They should have been able to identify this. The fact that they didn't becomes a kind of implicit indictment, you know, that they are cooperating with this attack.
Right. Well, I think that would be a logical conclusion, but unfortunately the illogical conclusions tend to get highlighted. I was going in a different direction with that, talking about the financial infrastructure for ISIS and the fact that they are still making most of their money at this point. Most of their revenue and income is coming from black market oil, which is getting it through Syria into Turkey via pipelines that were established around the time that this conflict broke out, and now they've taken over that infrastructure, and they're still managing to get their oil out and sold onto the market. So there's a lot of complicity in regards to that. And then, of course, the banking facilities. There was an RT reporter who recently asked a State Department spokesman, has the U.S. sanctioned any Iraqi or Syrian banks for their participation in helping to launder funds for ISIL? And the State Department spokesman responded by saying, I don't know about that. I'll have to check into it. In other words, they don't even care enough to know that information, whether or not banks are cooperating or in what way the U.S. State Department can do anything about it. Now, Iran, of course, with their banking structure, they can take them off the SWIFT network with the flick of a switch and completely, you know, embargo their country. But somehow or other, these ISIS terrorists are able to continue their financing unabated. But you raise an interesting point. We have this total surveillance control grid, which has been slotted into place for our safety and security, quote unquote. But as outlets like Boing Boing and others are pointing out, no surveillance has yet to produce a single lead or a break that has resulted in an arrest on a terrorism charge. They have not yet been able to point to a single arrest that came through this surveillance, that this 24/7 total surveillance that they've subjected us to, and yet they're now going to use the failure of their surveillance as an excuse for even more surveillance. And we're already seeing this with cries that based on unidentified European officials that are in some way connected with the investigation into what happened in Paris, they've alleged that these perpetrators were using encryption of some sort, although they have offered not even a description of what type of encryption, let alone how they were using it or any proof that they were.
I heard they were speaking in pig Latin.
Exactly. Well, yeah. But now they're going to say, look, now we need even more powers. We need backdoors. We need all of this wired into the system so that we can spy on everything everyone does, because, you know, those terrorists use technology too.
Yep. Where am I? Here. This is an article that was written by Paul Craig Roberts, and the headline is "Paris Changes Everything," says Merkel's German political allies. Now, the headline alone strikes me as interesting and perhaps significant, because I remember clearly after the 9/11 attacks in 2001, I saw repeated claims from people that said, this changes everything. And it becomes a justification to ignore the Constitution. It becomes a justification for a police state. This changes everything. And here I see that same headline are that same claim being made by Merkel's German political allies, this according to Paul Craig Roberts. Did the Paris attacks really change anything in a way that's real, or will they simply be a crisis that's a terrible thing to waste?
Yeah, well, obviously my sympathy is more towards the latter sentiment. But this is, I mean, the interesting part about that question is that that's not an independently, objectively verifiable reality. The question is, does this change everything in the minds of the people? And as you've just pointed out, now with terrorism vaulting to the number one issue on Americans' minds, clearly it is changing people's perceptions, changing their opinions, changing what they view as the important things to focus on. So in that sense, it is changing everything politically. And if that's happening in America, how much more so is that happening in Europe right now? Obviously a lot. So, yes, I think it's again, it's exactly like 9/11. The preparation and the groundwork had been there for years, but they were waiting for that catalyzing event to come along to basically implement all of these things, like the Patriot Act, which had been sitting waiting in the wings for years. Joe Biden bragged about writing the forerunner to the Patriot Act back in 1995. He's on record bragging about having written that beforehand. So, again, this is the type of thing that the power structure is going to benefit every time an event like this takes place. So whether or not they're directly behind it, as I tend to believe they are in one way or another, or whether it's completely and totally a genuine terrorist event that they could not have possibly foreseen, either way, they benefit. They end up getting the fruits of this by being able to implement all of these things. And now we're seeing it. Hollande is now trying to press for the amendment of the French Constitution to allow for greater policing powers and power to detain people and arrest people and raid people without warrants. So there you go. It's French 9/11 and French Patriot Act is on the way.
Yeah. And it's the same old thing. And what's surprising and perhaps discouraging and disappointing, they can run the same deception. They just have to wait a couple of years, and we can run it again here in the United States. We did it in 9/11. Now we're going to do it in France. A couple more years, we can do it again here in the United States. And the public doesn't seem to catch on, or do they? Is there a rising number of people that are really aware that, wait a second, the government is simply manipulating, maybe causing, certainly trying to exploit these problems in ways that are contrary to the American people's interests or the interests of the people of Japan or the interests of the people of France? Are people waking up, or do you think they will remain oblivious to the truth until somebody's got a bayonet pointing at them?
I would say that it's objectively true that a greater percentage of the population has been exposed to this information than they were at, say, at the time of 9/11, and that a greater percentage of the public is willing to at least entertain these ideas of false flag terrorism and things of that sort than they would have been 15 years ago. I think there has been a demonstrable change. Is it enough of a change? Is it now anywhere close to a majority of the population? Well, probably not. I'll let people out there decide that for themselves based on the interactions they have with the people around them. But I, from what I've heard from a lot of people, this event is just another one of those immediately people's minds switch off. Even people who were questioning government official stories on a number of things, their minds switch off in the event of big bloodshed like this, so that they just rally around whatever flag is being thrust in their face, this time the French flag, and they stop asking questions. So, again, I think there are more people who are aware of what's happening and the machinations that are happening behind the scenes, but maybe not enough to change the political discourse at this point.
I've got an article from Washington Times, and the headline is Obama's Islamic State Strategy Under Fire as France Pushes U.S.-Russia Coalition. France is trying to get the United States, according to this article, to work with Russia to go after ISIS in the Middle East. What do you think the probability is that we are going to enter into some coalition with Russia? And on top of which, a coalition to go after ISIS.
How interesting would that be? I mean, we've seen some incredible ups and downs here in the last couple of months, with Russia really getting involved in Syria in earnest in the last couple of months, and that brouhaha, and now this. It's a very good question, because I think at this point, at least on nominally, everyone at the table has the same interest, getting rid of the Islamic State. But then it goes to the deeper question. Well, who really wants to just simply get rid of the Islamic State, and who wants to use this as an opportunity to overthrow Assad? Will Russia continue to back Assad, or will they put Assad on the table and say, well, you know, maybe we can get rid of him and have some kind of power-sharing agreement? Again, I think these are the machinations that will show, you know, what the underlying strategy for these various players are. Who's going to give way and in what sense? I'm as interested to see how this will turn out as anyone else, I think.
Is there anyone in this entire drama that's simply playing it in a way that it could be described as honest? Or is everyone trying to take advantage of this thing and for their own benefit and to heck with everybody else? I mean, is everyone lying and deceiving? Is anyone telling the truth?
I think only the Syrian people are the ones that should be really listened to in terms of what they want for their country. And everyone else who's in Syria has a reason for being there. I mean, the Russians have their military base there and their agreements with Syria that they're trying to protect. And as I say, the Turkish, the Israelis, the Saudis, the Qataris, the U.S., all of these forces have their own plans and ambitions and goals. The only people who don't have an outside interest in it are, of course, the people in the country themselves. But, you know, they're the last ones to be listened to. And they're usually not even invited to these international conferences.
Yeah, that's exactly what we see. Again, Obama seems to be doing things that, from my perspective, are contrary to the general welfare of the American people. Does anyone care? No. All right, nobody's going to pay attention to what the American people want, with a possible exception. Who knows? Maybe Trump might. I don't know. There might be some new politicians coming. But the same thing's happening in other countries. The publics of all the people of all these nations are not being well represented, so far as I'm able to understand. Here's an article that was published on Yahoo News, and the headline is "Anonymous just declared war on ISIS in a chilling video online." Anonymous, the controversial hacking group known for exposing Chinese cybersecurity attacks on the United States, is officially waging war against ISIS. They published a video, and it said, "Anonymous from all over the world will hunt you down. All right? You should know that we will find you and we will not let you go. We will launch the biggest operation ever against you. Expect massive cyber attacks. War is declared. Get prepared." Here is Anonymous going after Anonymous. You understand? Hackers are going after ISIS, or at least that's the claim. What does that mean? Do you see significance in that? James,
it's difficult to say, because anonymous is whoever wants to say they're anonymous.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is, I think there really are genuine hackers and people sitting at home who genuinely do feel like they want to participate in these types of things, so they call themselves anonymous. But there are also obviously government informants and agents embedded in there calling themselves anonymous too. And again, we have people like the anonymous master hacker, Hector Xavier Monsiger, a.k.a. Sabu, I believe he was going by online, who turns out was an FBI informant all along. Well, who knew? So, again, I mean, we find this over and over with these sort of government people in bed. So I don't take these anonymous campaigns as some sort of serious expression of independence. Flowering online. I think there's a lot of intelligence manipulation that gets put into these. So when it comes to anonymous, I think you got to take it with a grain of salt. Some of it is real, and real people getting involved in it, and other people are ringleading it, and they tend to be informants for the government. So I don't tend to put a lot of faith in this as some sort of game changing thing. And even so, I think a lot of the Islamic State is, you've got their state of the art social media tweeting platform and everything set up in such a way that they're recruiting people from all around the world. I think a lot of that was a lot of media-generated fantasy land stuff anyway. So I don't think this is a particularly grievous threat, even if, you know, Islamic State is truly the independent threat we're being told it is.
All right, James, we're out of time. Thank you again for being on the program. Always enjoy these interviews. I'm Alfred Addis, folks. I want to thank you for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank, the producer, and James Corbett. Good night.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.
Got me a wealthy man.